So we started a new series this past week called A Heart Full of Love, and the idea is that we want to fill the love tank of the people around us with love. And how many of y'all this past week, have had the music of Grease stuck in your head? Anyone? Only a few? Only a couple? Darn, I did my job. All right, you're going to get a lot more Grease before the series is over. The point really was that I was hoping that you'd get those songs stuck in your head, and that when you're singing them, people are like, why are you singing Grease musical? You'd say, well, because love is like grease, because whenever there's two people who come in contact with each other, there is going to be friction in that relationship. We talked last week about how love is kind of like grease in a relationship. It just makes everything go smoother and work out better. And the point really is not just that you would feel love for others, but that they would feel loved. And there's a big difference between loving someone and having them feel loved. And that's all about how you communicate the love that you have for somebody. Because if I'm feeling love for you, but you don't feel loved, then it doesn't really matter. At the end of the day, there's not going to be that grease in the relationship. It's got to be on both parts there equally. And so in this series, we're going to talk about how do you communicate love to someone. And Gary Chapman wrote just a foundational book on this. Really smart guy. Made a lot of money out of it. Because he found out something that we all kind of knew but didn't really know how to identify. And that is, he said, there's five ways that we communicate love. There's five ways that we have love communicated to us, that we receive love. And those are to speak affirming words, to spend quality time, physical touch, through acts of service, and through giving of gifts, which is what you saw there in that opening kind of montage. And this morning we'll be looking at the one which I think is the most powerful one on the list, and that is words of affirmation, speaking words of affirmation. And I don't know about you, but if somebody came up to me and said those words, you just remember who you are. You're the bulldog of Bergen. You're the pride of New Jersey. You're the hope of all the people, and you're our kid's hero. And you are the champion of my heart. I don't know about you, but I think I'm ready to go out and fight for the title. I mean, I'm not even good at boxing, but I think I could do it with those words behind me. And with somebody having said that to me. And there's just power in hearing that and those things being said. And I just kind of want to pause for a moment and ask you a little reflection question. What has that been for you? What is something that somebody has said that's been an encouraging word that stuck with you? Something maybe was said in your childhood, maybe something was said recently, maybe it was something that launched you into a new career or into a new pursuit, or maybe got you to go back to school. What was it that something said that there are words you have never forgotten? Something that somebody said. You just kind of pause for a moment and think about that. Don't share with me. Just kind of think it for yourself. So, yeah, it's kind of one of the introspective sort of things. I'm glad you got one, though. That was really quick. And I hope you had something that came to your mind really quick. What's something that somebody has said to you that just really stuck with you that was very encouraging and has kind of come back to you to remind you of that fact? And there's like a weird something back here. I don't know what it is, but it's driving me nuts in the back of my head. I don't know if you can, like, mute it back there. What? No, it's not just in here. Speaking of that, though, what is something that somebody has said to you that was very damaging or corrosive that stuck with you? So we're going to the opposite of the perspective. What are some hurtful words that somebody has said to you that has stuck with you, that's been hard for you to shake free of? See, now get those words in your mind. Which one was it easier to remember? Proverbs 18:21 says, "The words that we speak have the power of life and death." The words that we speak have the power of life and death. And as you reflect back on the two things that you just thought about, I don't think I need to convince you of the truth of God's word this morning. That the words that are spoken, the words that we hear, have the power of life and have the power of death. Sometimes you might even look at that and say, you know, that just seems a little extreme. Maybe that's a little hyperbole there. Maybe he's exaggerating a little bit just to drive home a point. Maybe that's just because it's out of the book of Proverbs and they use a lot of poetry there. Maybe that's just poetic language. But if you think back to Jesus' words, Jesus, when Lazarus, which was a good friend of Jesus, who had died, had been buried, he was dead for 4 days. What does Jesus do when he walks to the tomb to bring Lazarus back from the dead? Does he work up some medicine? Does he go in there and touch him? Does he perform a dance? He just speaks out the words. He just says, "Lazarus, come forth." through his words, he speaks life and he comes forth. If you go back to the creation story, I always picture God taking a bowl of Play-Doh and creating out of like Play-Doh, like, you know, moving stuff around. But that's not what it says in Genesis 1. It just says that God spoke and it came into being. That just at his very words, creation came into being. So that his very words is what brought life to all of the world. That he created, that just created everything by his words. And it's almost as if he is trying to imply to us, to show to us, listen, the power of your words has the ability to create life in other people. You can create life or destroy life with the words that you say and the things that you say to others. They have a profound impact on us. And if you think back to the things that have been said to you over the years, they have a profound impact on your career and the direction that you've gone. I mean, even for me, I know personally, this church really never should have happened. I mean, if you kind of go back and you look at where I was in my life at the time, I was just coming off probably the biggest failure of my life. And Melissa and I went out for a walk, and in the midst of that walk, we kind of talked about everything, talked about our life, talked about our direction, what we were going to do. And we had just had one other major setback that had hit us as far as career-wise goes. And in the midst of that conversation, we were going for a walk around the block. In the midst of that conversation, the idea of this church came up. And I said, you know, Melissa, I just got to share with you. This is just kind of a crazy thing. I'm just going to throw this out. What if we started a church? This is right after we just failed at starting a church, just keep in mind. And we talked about it. And she paused for a moment. At this moment, she looked at me and she said, yeah, I'm behind you. I believe you can do it. Win or lose, I'm behind you. And without those words, nothing ever would have happened after that. I mean, those are words that changed the course of my life and my future for good. And it's just those words that were spoken into me at the right time, the right words at the right time. And at the same time, you see on the converse side that words also have the power of death. And the scary thing about it is you never know when something you say is going to be something that somebody hangs on to for the rest of their life. I mean, I would venture to say that you don't remember anything that was said to you right after your mom or dad looked at you in the eyes and said, now don't ever forget what I'm about to tell you. Does anybody know anything that was said after that? I can't think of a single thing my dad ever said to me after, now what I'm about to tell you is something I don't want you to ever forget. And I know he said that. I just don't have a clue what he said after that. Right? But what's frustrating is that there's other things that have been said to you by your mom or your dad or your spouse or a close friend of yours or a boyfriend you dated back in high school that you have never forgotten those words. And they've been damaging. And they've been hurting. And they've killed a dream of yours. They for some people, the words that have been said to them made them drop out of school, made them pursue some other interest, some other passion, made them scared to fail, made them scared to ask somebody out, made them scared to ever attempt to try something daring in life. And so they played out a very safe existence because they were afraid of failure and worse yet, afraid of what people might think or say to me because of what they've said in the past. There's a guy named Charles Cooley, who back in 1902, he's a sociologist, who said this: you form your view of yourself by what the most important person of your life says about you. You form your view of yourself about what the most important person in your life says about you. And this came to be known in sociological circles as your looking glass self. And bottom line is that you become the most important, you become what the most important person in your life, whether it's your father or your mother or your wife or your husband or your boyfriend, your girlfriend, whoever is the most important person in your life, whatever they think about you, whatever they say about you, whatever the words are that they speak into your life, actually shapes who you become. Think about how powerful that is. Think about the power that you hold over someone who thinks of you as the most important person in their life. Think about the power that God has vested in your mouth and in the words that you say. You literally are, what Charles Cooley is saying here, back in 1902, a little over 100 years ago, what he's saying is, listen, you literally have the power of life or death over another human being. This is what we observe sociologically. This isn't what the Bible is saying. This is what God is saying. This is just what sociological observations have led us to believe. The very same things we see in Scripture, that the words that we say have the power of life and death. And Charles Cooley, from his secular studies, is going back and saying, yes, well, I agree with that. I agree wholeheartedly because you are shaped. How you see yourself is defined by, it is shaped by, whatever the most important person in your life says about you. Which goes to a couple things. It's very important who the most important person is in your life. It's very, very important. If you make your job the most important person or most important thing in your life, then your boss may very well become the most important person in your life. And you've unknowingly given them an immense power over your life. This is why we say to our sons and our daughters, be careful who you date. Because we know that who you date is going to ultimately become the most important person in your life. We've all seen the destructive effects of a 15-year-old girl whose 18-year-old boyfriend is the most important person in her life. And what he says is the power of life and death over her soul. And you want so desperately to go to her and say, guard your heart, honey. Guard your heart because you're about to give the most important power of any human being over to this guy. This is why God ultimately says, I want to be the most important person in your life. And let's face it, none of us make God the most important person in our life. We want to. We say that we are. God desperately wants to be that in our life. But we always give it to a person because they're here, they're around us, and we care more about what they think than anybody else thinks. And so what Cooley has said, what the Bible has said, is that whoever is the most important person in your life has the power of life and death over you. And the other thing that's crazy about this is that oftentimes we think that our self-esteem, our self-image is shaped when we're a child, and we kind of never divert from that. What sociologists have observed is that this is constantly in flux throughout your life. This isn't something that's just formed when you're 9 or 10 or 11 years old. This is something that is daily changing. This is constantly changing every day of your life, that you're like a raindrop flying through the air, not knowing where it's going to land, and every word that is said can push you one way or another. And the direction that it can push you can have a drastic effect over whether or not you end up in the Pacific Ocean or the Atlantic Ocean, depending on where you fall as you come down to earth. And so the words that are being said to you can push you in one direction or another. The words that you're saying to others have a profound impact, that you actually have the ability to shape the course and the direction and the future of your kid's life just by the very words that you say. Your words have more impact on them than maybe their own physical talent has on them. The story of that boxer, James Raddick, he was not the most skilled boxer. That's kind of what made the movie so exciting and so interesting to watch. He wasn't the best, but he became the world champion. And what you see in there is that he had a wife and he had a community and he had his kids who were behind him and thought the world of him. And all of us have seen some guy who never deserved to be where he was at. We've all seen some young lady who never had the talent to be where she's at. But she simply had the words behind her that kept speaking truth and life into her that pushed her further and further and farther than she ever could have gone before. And the same idea is what we see over in Ephesians chapter 4, verse 29. It says, Do not let any unwholesome talk come out of your mouth, but only that which is helpful for building others up according to their needs, that it may benefit those who listen. So this is, do not let any unwholesome talk. And this word, unwholesome talk, is a word that means corrosive. It has that picture of corrosive or damaging. And any of y'all remember back a couple years back, Minneapolis, Minnesota, I-35 bridge. One day, commuters on their way to work, the bridge just collapsed. It was there one second, next second it was gone. Literally, it didn't like slowly go down. It was just people were going over, and all of a sudden, boom, the thing just fell right through. Engineers went back to figure out what the problem was. It was the way it was designed, the way it was built. No. It was just simply corrosion. There was enough corrosion over enough time. Eventually, one day, people woke up, tried to cross it. Boom, it's gone. Corrosive words are like that. If you live in a house of corrosive words, it will just drip and drip and drip and drip on the heart and soul of everybody in that house. If you work in an environment where there are corrosive words, it will drip and drip and drip and drip. And then eventually, one day, out of nowhere, it seems, you wake up and everything comes crashing down. But it was all because there was corrosion and corrosion and corrosion over time inside the life and the soul of people. So he says, listen, don't let any unwholesome talk come out of your mouth. Oftentimes when we read that verse, we try to use it as a way to say, don't cuss. It's a prohibition. I'm not saying God wants you to cuss. I'm just saying this isn't the text for it. Don't get me wrong there at all. Just, you know, cussing isn't helpful or isn't uplifting. It can be corrosive as well, but very specifically it's talking about a corrupting or corroding talk, because the very next word is in contrast to this, but only that which is helpful for building others up. The word picture there is to put an addition on the house, to make more room for life. to make more room for living, to expand your family, to expand someone's life. And so the picture there is, if you have a house, it's like a one bedroom house, it's saying you're going to put an addition on it so you can have more room for life, that the words that you speak might put an addition on somebody's life, that it would push them further and farther than they ever could have gone without those words. And the words that you have to say to somebody, to your kids, to your parents, to people you work with as a leader, or if you're being led to your leaders, or to your husband, to your wife, to the one you're dating, those words have the ability to add to their life. They're called life-giving words. You're literally expanding their territory, expanding their house, expanding their influence just by the words that you speak and say to them. And then it says, this is very important, according to their needs. Do not let any wholesome talk come out of their mouth, but only that which is there for building others up, according to their needs. We're reminded that even in the when God created, he spoke words into being. We all know that creation does not happen as a result of chaotic circumstance. In science class, has a really hard time with this when they go to their theories of creation, because they know that nothing that is directed, nothing that is intentional, comes out looking planned or designed. And so there's this big problem with the natural creation idea, or that's even funny to say, natural creation, the natural accidental existence of all being, because you can't have this big explosion, everything fall into order. You don't throw a grenade into a pile of rubble and have it come out looking neat and orderly. It's always the result of a planned, intentional idea. Everything that is designed, everything that works and functions well, is the result of intention. So what he's saying here about your words, you need to think about the words that you say. And you need to be very carefully, if you're going to you speak words that build others up, they need to be very careful. I always say a hammer is a neat tool in a toolbox. Because with a hammer, you can both build up and you can tear down. When it's demolition day, you bring your hammer. When it's building day, you bring a hammer. I know from the building projects we've done here in our own building is if you were here a year and a half ago, there were actually walls right next to where that door is there, to that corner there, and right next to this door here, to that corner there. There were actually walls there, and there was a two-story, where you guys are sitting on the sides, those were two-story rooms. It took us all of one day to tear that out. Literally, I mean, one day, and it was a major demo project, and we had probably 20, 30 people up here, and it was a fun day. Everybody loves to come for demo day. People always ask me, when's demo day? Well, if it's demo day, I'm here. I can swing a sledgehammer. I can move a crowbar. I just want to be here for demo day. And we had tons of people show up for demo day. And then building days came. And the crowd dwindled out. Don't get me wrong. There was a lot of people here, but the crowd dwindles out when it comes time to build. Because building is hard work. And you can randomly swing a hammer. It doesn't matter what you hit, you're productive on demolition day. Isn't that right? I mean, you can just sit here and go like this and just beat at something, and it's going to accomplish a purpose. But not everybody can build, because building takes skill. And it's actually harder than it seems to hit the nail on the head, isn't it? I mean, give a hammer to a six-year-old and say, destroy something, and you will see they're amazing at it, right? Give a hammer to a six-year-old and say, pound this nail in. And I'll tell you this, don't make the mistake I did. Here, let me hold that for you. Yeah, Home Depot Build It Workshop. Lesson learned. The same is true with our words. It doesn't take any thought whatsoever to shoot off a destructive word, does it? You can just open your mouth and anything can flow out, and it could be good or it could be bad, but most often it's something bad. Thoughtless words will kill, will crush. And if you were to go back and ask the person, when that word, when I said earlier at the beginning of the sermon, I said, think about something that has been said to you that was very destructive, very hurtful, that stuck with you. If you were to go back and ask that person and say, did you mean to say this to me? Do you know what impact this has had on my life? First of all, they probably look at you and say, I didn't even say that. They have no recollection that they said it. They would be crushed and hurt if they knew that they had said that to you. Because they never intended for those to be hurting words. Oftentimes those words were spoken to us by somebody who, if you ask them, do you love this person? They would say, yes, I love them. Well, do you realize that you have said something very damaging and very hurtful that they have never forgotten? And it's all because these words just come out very reckless and very callous. And so here in Ephesians, God warns us, and he reminds us, listen, don't let any unwholesome talk come out of your mouth. Don't let any corrosive talk, but only that which is helpful for building others up, according to their needs. And where I'm getting at with this is that it takes thought, it takes study to know what somebody else needs to hear, doesn't it? You have to know somebody to know the right word, to know what is the word that they need to hear that will motivate them. A very good coach will know these words. Actually, it was Phil Jackson is writing a book that's coming out here in the next couple of days about his coaching career. For those of you who don't know, Phil Jackson has won 11 NBA titles. He has the distinct privilege of coaching both Michael Jordan and Kobe Bryant, two of the guys who people consider, if you're talking about the best NBA players of all time after Larry Bird, most people consider these two to be the best after. Oh, I'm sorry. Did I give something? Okay. But he's had the opportunity to coach two of the top five best players of NBA history. And he was asked to really, you know, and the question came up is like he's always asked, which was better, Kobe or Michael? Because they're different eras. They didn't really play against each other in their prime. So which one was better? And Phil said something very unique. And he said, there is no comparison between the two. It's Michael Jordan. And it's not about their playing ability that separates them in between the two of them. It's Michael Jordan's leadership ability that separates the two of them. Jordan was a far better leader than Kobe ever was. Jordan knew the right words to say to everybody on his team to get the most production out of them, whereas Kobe pretty much kept to himself, played his own game. And that's why over his career, guys like Derek Fisher and Shaquille O'Neal would be the ones that everybody looked to on his team. And if you look at Kobe's career, he only succeeded when he had somebody like that on his team to be the leader for him. Whereas Michael led guys like Dennis Rodman. Everywhere Dennis Rodman played, he was always a problem. Would always lose his cool, always lose his temper. But Michael, because he always knew the words to say at the right time, could look at even someone like Dennis Rodman and get him under control and rein him in. And if you know Dennis Rodman, who I now believe is our ambassador to North Korea, which goes to show you just how good of a job Michael Jordan did with him. Just saying. I mean, that's some talent right there. By far and away, if you can get Dennis Rodman to be the ambassador to North Korea, you've done something. Well, what Phil was getting at here was Ephesians 4:29 is saying, listen, if you have to know the person so well to know what it is that they need to hear. And that takes time. That takes observation. That takes being around them, knowing the right words to say. And you know this with your kids. There are certain words that will motivate one child that won't motivate another. There are certain words that will motivate somebody that you work with that won't motivate your wife. And so you have to know the person well enough to know what are the words, not that I want to say them, what are the words that they need to hear right now to encourage them, to lift them up, to get them to push further and farther than they would on their own. What are the words that I can say to raise their quit tolerance? I always say with my kids, that's something I'm always trying to do is to raise their quit tolerance. Their quit tolerance is that point where they say, I give up. You know, when they're young, they want to give up on everything. And you have some kids who have a really high quit tolerance and it's very easy to teach them how to ride a bike. You have some kids who have a very low quit tolerance and it's very hard to teach them to ride a bike, but riding a bike is one of those things. You just got to do it. You just got to tough it out. And so what are the words that you need to say to build them up in that moment? And then lastly, he says, the words you need to say that it may benefit those who listen. It literally means to give grace, to infuse grace, to infuse life into their soul. What can you do to infuse life into that person? And so what do they need to hear? What are the strategic, intentional words that you need to hear that need to come out of your mouth to say to them, to build them up? And this is very important for the people who are important in your life. Why? Because the things that you say to the people who consider you to be the most important person in life, you're going to shape how they view themselves. And if you're reckless and thoughtless with your words, you can tear them down in an instant. And it takes years to build up. It takes seconds to tear down. And so I want to give you some ideas for different categories of you in here, for things that you can say to the people in your life. So if you're a married man, what your wife needs to hear you say, in addition to things that you have observed that she needs to hear, in general, these are general principles that women need to hear, general principles in each of these categories, but you will know, you need to know these people in your life better enough to know what you need to be able to say beyond these things. But your wife needs to hear you say this. Honey, you're beautiful. You know, every day I face a lot of temptation. Madison Avenue is always throwing images of all kinds of women out there at me. But I need you to know that you're worth 100% of my attention and my affection and my desire. And I'm committed to you. And beyond that, I am loyal to you. And you're the love of my life. There are some women in this room who right then, who just now just said, oh, those are the words I long to hear. For you married ladies, your husband longs to hear you say, you're the bulldog of Bergen, the pride of New Jersey. You're everybody's hope and my kid's hero, and you are the champion of my heart. Come on, seriously, guys, who would not want to hear their wife say that right there, huh? You know you do. Either that or something along the lines of, I trust you, and I love following your leadership, and I believe in you. And I believe that you're going to figure this out. And win or lose, I'm behind you. I am proud of you, and I am proud to call you my husband. For those of you who have single friends, or maybe if you're single and you're hanging out together, your friends need to hear you say you're worth pursuing, and you are a very special person, and someone is going to be lucky to capture your attention and your affection one day. For you parents in the room, no matter your age, what your children need to hear from you, you know, I love you and I love being your dad. I thank God every day that I get the privilege of being your dad. And I want you to accomplish great things in life. No matter what you do in life, you need to know I'm committed to you and I am proud of you. Not because of what you accomplish or what you do. I'm proud of you. And my love for you is unconditional. And you are now and forever and always will be my son. And I love you. They need to hear that over and over and over and over again. And for those of you who still have parents who are living, you know, it's funny, when you're a kid, you don't realize your parents have feelings, do you? And you got to remind yourself, your kids don't realize you have feelings. That's why kids can say some of the most hurtful, damaging words. They just have no concept. They have no clue that you actually have feelings. You're just nothing more than a robot to them that provides meals and clothing. And that's why kids can say, I hate you, and never even think about it. So just know that they don't realize you have feelings. But now that you have grown and you've matured, some of you even to this day have not realized that your parents do have feelings. And that what you think of them matters. And so regardless of your age, if your parents are still living, they need to hear you say these words. Thank you for your sacrifice. You know, it makes me feel valuable and valued, all the sacrifices that you've made for me along the way, from the time I was born up into this very day. And I want you to know a lot of the things that I've accomplished and a lot of the things that I've done are a direct result of the words that you've spoke to me and the sacrifices you've made. And I want to let you know I'm forever grateful for that. And even though it's not Mother's Day this week, you can still do that. For those of you who are leaders, I know you prayed and hoped and worked really hard to get to the position that you're at, whether it be in the military or in your job. A lot of times, though, we never think about the responsibility that's laid upon us once we get there. And the people in your organization need to hear things like, this team would not be the same without you. You know, you bring a lot to the table, and we could not accomplish what we're doing right now without you and what you're doing. Thank you for working the extra hours and making the sacrifice. And it's very easy to get into the mindset, well, they're paid to be here. Just let you know, this is a free market economy and they're volunteers. And you don't believe that? Wait till somebody on the street offers them 25 cents more an hour. That was the craziest thing. We had an elementary school and a preschool at the church I was at in Florida. We would have teachers leave for 5 cents more per hour from another daycare down the street. Really? You know, what that tells me now in hindsight, now that I know more about leadership, is if somebody's willing to leave your place of employment for a nickel more an hour, they did not feel valued and a part of that team and cherished. There's a leadership issue there. If you're an employee, just know your boss has feelings too. And oftentimes you think of them as cold and heartless, and they don't care. They're only about the bottom line. They are a human being just like you are. And what you think of them does matter, believe it or not. And many of them just need to hear you say, yeah, I want to thank you for your leadership and for creating the kind of work environment where it makes me want to love just to come to work. Maybe you can't say that, but maybe you can say something else that would be an encouragement to them. You want to see them become a better leader? Encourage them to become a better leader. Not with divisive, destructive, corrosive words and say, well, you know, I believe you'll figure it out. No, just say, here's the deal. You're the one being paid the big bucks. You're in charge. I'll do whatever you ask me to do. And I trust you'll figure this out. And we're all dependent on you. That's a lot of confidence. That speaks life. So as we close out, I just know that for most of you in this room, this is not natural. You know, what's easy and natural is swinging a hammer randomly. But if you're going to be intentional about love, you've got to be intentional about this. If you really want to hit the nail on the head for these encouraging words, you need to think about them. You can start with those phrases I just said. Hopefully you took some notes on that. Hopefully, you know, some of those registered. You can start with those words and expand from there. And so right now, I just want you to pause for a moment and think, who is it in my life that might think I'm the most important person in their world? If somebody were asked, who are the top five most important people in your life, whose list would I make? Now, what are the life-giving words you need to say to that person? All right, before we close, I have an assignment for you. If you have a smartphone, pull it out. Yep. Pull it out. Open up your texting. Find the name, phone number of one of those people that you just thought of in your mind. And send them a text right now that'll encourage them. Everybody done that? Some of you are like, I still have an old touch clamshell phone, and it's really hard because I have to hit the number 6, 7 times just to get the right letter up. Any of y'all still using one? Don't raise your hand because you got your work cut out for you. that's okay. How many of y'all were intimidated the second I said that? You're like, actually do it? This is all theoretical in here. This isn't practical. We're not doing this stuff. No. What if you did that every day of the week? Just text. Just text. What if you then went from text to words and spoke them? I'm very interested. I want to hear kind of back from you if you maybe just would post a comment on our Facebook page this week. Let me know the responses that people gave you from the text you just sent out. I'm kind of interested to hear that. Maybe it's nothing. Maybe somebody was like, where did that come from? I don't know. So with that, let's close. Father, we truly do have an amazing power that you've given us. Maybe before this morning, we never realized the power that you put in our hands and in our mouth. That the very words that we say have the power of life and death over others. Words like, I forgive you. I'm committed to you. I will never give up on you. I believe in you. I trust you. I'm proud of you. Father, these are words that our souls long to hear from those important to us. And Father, as we read through the words of the Scriptures, we find all of these words are said by you to us. Father, forgive us for not making you the most important person and the most important thing in our life. For if we had, our lives would be shaped and pushed in a different direction than they have been. So may we hear right now these words from you and receive them and accept them and allow them to bring life to our soul. In Jesus' name, amen.